Welcome to Drupal Easy Podcast number 139. My name is Mike Pinello, joined today by Ted Bowman. Hey, Ted.
Hey, Mike. Good to be back.
Is fall arriving officially?
I think tomorrow is the last day of summer.
Well, I mean, as far as the weather. Has it been frost yet in Ithaca?
It's been down near freezing.
Man.
And the trees across the street have changed color.
You posted some awesome pictures
that you
took of those waterfalls.
It's an awesome place.
Caused me to, have anger jealousy.
I strive for that in all my online postings.
Maybe that's Jenger or
Angris.
I don't know. One of those. But I looked at him. And I'm like, Ted. Anyway.
Yeah.
Our guest today, Josh Mitchell, the Drupal Association CTO. How are you, Josh?
I'm doing well.
So I asked you on because we got to talking at DrupalCon Amsterdam. And I very quickly realized that you were the guy who was going to kind of be, leading the charge or, I don't even know what the right way to say it is, but wrapping your arms around Drupal.org user profiles, which is something we've talked about on the podcast before, and it's always been kind of a little bit of a discussion point, let's say, how they're kind of skewed, I feel, towards people who can contribute code rather mm-hmm. than other types of contributions. So we're going to talk about that and some other things in a few minutes.
Sounds good.
But before we get to that, let's find out about you, because you've only been in the position of CTO since, I believe, March. Is that correct?
Barely March. March 31st was my first day.
Oh, so that doesn't count. So we'll just say April then.
Hey, I felt weird starting on April Fool's Day, so I just backed. No, I'm just kidding.
There you go. Well, so you actually were hired by the DA from within the community. Is that correct?
Yes, I have been around the Drupal community for a long time. I've been in a management role for about as long as I've been using Drupal, so I'm not a huge code committer. Mm-hmm. But I've been actively building Drupal websites and selling the idea that open source can transform the way that we think about websites for many years now. So
does your background include Drupal and other CMSs as well?
Yes, definitely some other CMSs. If we go all the way back to whenever I was a developer, I started in higher education and was building kind of my own CMS. The first few rounds were with Cold Fusion, which I'm almost embarrassed to admit that I was a Cold Fusion developer.
That's all right. We've all been there. It's okay.
I've been there.
You're among friends.
There's a 12-step program for it to get you past it. But
we all had to do CF query. None of us are proud of it.
But Michael, edit this out. Every guest says this, and we edit it out.
No one will ever know. Your secret is safe with us.
That's awesome. Just edit out anything I say that suggests that it was an awesome platform. So building my own CMSs and then going to work for a startup, which was my first kind of introduction to PHP, and that was working with kind of large standard setting or bodies, USB, WiMAX, DLNA, those types of organizations that needed to come together on a technical specification. And we built the company I worked for, we built a platform that basically enabled all that. So that was kind of large scale collaboration type project. That was the first one. And it was around that time that I actually got introduced to Drupal as a possibility. I think Drupal was probably in, it was probably 4.7 at that time.
But that particular part of your background, probably served you well as far as applying for the position you're in now.
Oh, definitely.
That large-scale collaboration.
Large-scale collaboration, large-scale websites, that definitely feeds into the type of stuff that we're doing here. And working with organizations where you have to come to consensus rather than it being driven by a single person, I think that's that's also, I think, a key component. After that, I worked in a digital marketing agency for a while and actually established Drupal expertise in that organization. The big project that I can really say kind of kicked off my deep understanding of Drupal was building the member website for the Recording Academy. The Recording Academy. So Grammy365.com. I think they just relaunched under Grammy Pro, which I thought was interesting. But basically selling open source, selling Drupal to one of those big media organizations was my first really big website. So at least my first really big website with Drupal. So
how did you come to the Drupal Association? Were you approached? Did someone suggest that you apply? Or did you see the opening and felt that you were well-suited? Or kind of what was your path to us?
Yeah, the last 5 years or so I've been in government, working for Multnomah County, which is here in the Portland area. And I actually wasn't looking, and Michael Krauss from Acquia, who I've talked to at various events over the years, and mostly from a Drupal and big ecosystem sort of situation. Mm-hmm. He and I were chatting, and he was like, "You should totally apply to this. You'd be perfect for it. I mean, you're building an ecosystem of open source software and Drupal within government. It's a very similar sort of place." And he also knew that I was really committed to the idea of being able to give back to Drupal in ways other than in code, because that's not my background at this point. I couldn't go out and write a phenomenal function in PHP to save my life. Mm-hmm. But I can help organizations build really first-class Drupal websites. And so it made a lot of sense from that standpoint. And so his encouragement kind of kick-started it for me in a few months' worth of interviewing process. It takes a while to hire a CTO.
Yeah.
And then I was here. So,
I mean, do you think that it's still something in the Drupal community where people feel that they have to code in order to contribute? I mean, it's probably getting better, but overall,
here's how I would phrase it. I think all the contributions within the community are important. Mm-hmm. The value of code contributions, whether that be contributing directly to core or contributing code in a module or theme or putting out best practices for DevOps, you know, really setting up great servers and making Drupal performant, which is a whole class of people as well. Those sorts of contributions are skewed towards being more important. And I think the reality is we need to find a way to highlight people who are great community organizers and who help connect those people who create that great code and who can really optimize Drupal, because our success as a community is going to be how good the code is, but our success in building those connections and relationships and networking is going to be on the skills and the capabilities of the people who are contributing in that more societal, sociological space of bringing together networks of great people.
Well, so it's almost like you know what our main topic is.
Yes, I do know the main topic.
So we're going to talk about user profiles and how we can highlight those non-code contributions better in a second. But just for someone who doesn't know, and I'll play the Rube right now, What's your day-to-day responsibilities? What do you do, you know, week in, week out as the chief technical officer of the Drupal Association?
Well, for the last 4 to 5 months, I would say the biggest thing I've been doing is hiring, trying to build up a team. We are now to the point of having basically 10.5 FTE that are dedicated to supporting the Drupal infrastructure now. If you go back as far as September of last year, we had 2 contractors.
Yeah, that's amazing. I had no idea it was up to 10 already.
Yeah, so we've basically, right around the time I came on board, they had one hire before me who was a key community member on the systems administration space, who was really involved in the open source labs down in Corvallis. That's Rudy Grigar. They had hired Rudy, and I was the very next hire after that. So it really rapid build up from the point that I came on, because that was my number one priority, was getting a good core set of people who could come in and build large-scale Drupal.
All right, so let me ask the obvious question before you go too much further is, I mean, hiring 10 full-time people, that's not an inexpensive proposition.
It's not, no.
So that budget, is that budget coming from, you know, it's money made off DrupalCon or from sponsors or?
Primarily, it's from supporting partners. So our big supporting partner program that we've fired up, they are crucial to us being able to offer this support for Drupal.org. We have some small amounts of revenue that we're also looking at from advertising standpoint. We've got some internal ads on Drupal.org. They're very targeted, because obviously we're never going to throw ads on a project page, or we're never going to throw ads on the issue queues. That doesn't make any sense. But we have pages.
This bug sponsored by.
Exactly. we are looking at this bug fixed by and getting some credit to the people who help with that, but it will never be an ad. You will never have to pay for that space. that's a whole different sort of organizational method right there. Right. But so we've got some little advertising pieces. That's a small bit of the revenue. And then there is a little bit of revenue off of the cons, though the cons, most of that revenue funds the people who are in community programs.
Okay.
And we're looking at ways to expand that revenue equation. Things like Drupal jobs. You know, we've already sold 1,500 job credits.
Wow.
We don't have 1,500 jobs posted yet, but we've already sold 1,500 job credits on Drupal jobs, and so we're excited about the potential revenue that represents, because it can definitely help fund the work that we're doing on Drupal.org through something that the community was desperately needing, which is a great professional place to recruit and to be recruited.
So going from two contractors to 10 full-time employees over the past year kind of reminds me of the last time we had Holly on the podcast, Holly Ross, the executive director of the DA. I know you know who she is. Ted. Ted has no idea. So
no.
There you go, Ted. That's for you.
I blank out all the past podcasts.
Oh, okay. but one of the things we talked about was defining the line between what the community should do from a volunteer standpoint and what the DA should do from a service standpoint. So I can imagine going from two contractors to 10 full-time employees, this is something that you guys are looking at probably almost constantly, because it seems like there's, you know, it's obvious that some of the work that volunteers used to be doing, you guys have now brought in house. Is that safe? Is that fair to say?
I'm actually going to say mostly not. I'm going to say we're mostly doing the work that volunteers couldn't do. Because the reality is, I mean, we're still very much supporting volunteers that want to contribute. Who will, you know, give us a patch or, you know, make some suggestions. We have a phenomenal group of people on the infrastructure team. It's still mostly volunteer who are jumping in and doing great work. But we're enabling all of that. What most people don't realize is, in order for code to be committed to Drupal.org, we have to have somebody review it. There is a set of steps. We've got to run it through some tests. We've got to push it up there. There is a cost to every single change to Drupal.org, regardless of whether it's coming from a volunteer, where we just got to vet it and make sure that it's safe. We've had about 100 commits since Austin, back in June, where we've pushed changes that were usually started by volunteers, and then pushing that up the chain. And that's both into, you know, those commits are across several different projects for the Drupal.org project as a whole. It's really important to have people who are full-time working on stuff in order to enable all of those volunteers. A good example is TestBots. The TestBot initiative, we've got some great people who are contributing their time in that space, Jeremy Thorsten, Ricardo Amaro. they are building the next version of TestBots. But in order for them to do that, they needed bandwidth. They needed someone to support the old version of TestBots so that they could work on the new infrastructure. And so my team spent some time at Austin sitting in a meeting with Jeremy, and he just basically gave us a full rundown of here are all the support tasks that have to happen when a sprint is going on and we need to fire up more machines because there's going to be more tests that are being run against the system. Here's what happens when we see one of those tests gets caught in the system and the queue needs to be refreshed and we need to move forward from there. So he walked through all that with our team, and now he doesn't have to do that on a day-to-day basis, meaning that those precious hours that he's able to contribute, because he has a full-time job that's not even Drupal. I mean, like, his day job isn't building Drupal websites. It's
construction.
Completely different space. No, I think it's telecom or something to that effect. So working as like a systems integrator sort of thing. Wow. So his knowledge of those systems is phenomenal. And we've basically freed him up to actually contribute his volunteer hours directly to something that's moving things forward instead of just maintaining a system that we all know we want to upgrade and get rid of. So being able to have that core of people that can grab projects like that where we can take maintenance and support off the backs of volunteers, because that's a really good way to burn out a volunteer, is giving them a maintenance and support task that they have to follow for year after year after year with no real credit or without being highlighted in the community. Because, by the way, those sorts of contributions don't show up in commit logs either.
Exactly. I mean,
but being able to take care of that, and also to be able to take care of those projects that are just they're bigger than a breadbasket. You know, you can't build it in a day in your shop. You gotta have an assembly line put together so that a group of specialists can actually knock it out over time. Those sorts of projects are really hard to do completely volunteer-based because it takes a long time to get all the volunteers on the same call on a regular basis to move the thing forward. So by having a dedicated team, we can take the great work that was done by someone like Danny Norden on the user profile pages. She's been working in the issue queues, going back and forth with the community, getting great feedback about how they should look and what type of content we might want to include. She can come back to us near the end of that process, and we can do a few more rounds with the team where we can say, okay, well, this is what we know based on all the information we actually have, the history we have with the system, how the systems talk to each other and integrate, and we can start implementing something like that. That, frankly, if left to just being implemented by volunteers, would take years. But with a dedicated team, we can probably, you know, move something forward like that in a 3 to 6 month time frame, because it's a nice containable project that we can focus on.
Oh, sorry, I don't know what I just did there.
Got bored, Mike started making another call.
I think I just added our ghost co-host here. Ryan, are you there?
Hey.
Okay. Better late than never, young man.
That's right.
All right. So, sorry about that, Josh.
No worries.
So, would it be fair to say that up to now, and the bulk of what, and I'm trying to summarize here, and I could be completely off, but the bulk of what you guys have been doing for the past few months is catch-up work, trying to, you know, kind of put the infrastructure team on a good footing moving forward, as opposed to like long-term planning and figuring out what's the next big thing.
Oh, we've been doing the long-term planning part. That's the other half of what we've been doing. We've been enabling small, quick wins. We've been working on a few of those small, quick wins ourselves. We've been working on revenue projects like the Drupal jobs to get that in place, some updates for supporting partner pages on Drupal.org so that lays out better and helps those people get the credit they deserve. And then we've also been doing an enormous amount of planning. And the planning we've been doing with the working groups, the Drupal.org working groups. So we've got the Drupal.org software working group, the Drupal.org content working group, and the Drupal.org infrastructure working group. And those groups have been really integral in us doing a planning process where we can go through and prioritize the feature after feature after feature that have been requested for years, but we haven't got to them yet. I mean, the reality is we could get to one or two of those and in a year in the past with some concerted effort of using a contractor here, a contractor there. Now we're going to have a list of priorities where it's like, okay, the community helped us prioritize this through the working groups and through ideation processes and through the user research that we just finished up after Austin. And so we've got all this great stuff prioritized. Now we can start knocking it out.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there's some pretty significant strategic initiatives contained in that, but I'm not going to talk about those yet because I'm going to talk about that in Amsterdam.
All right, fair enough. Well, let's talk about user profiles because we've kind of hinted at it a few times. And it seems to me, again, you've been doing a great job correcting everything wrong that I've said, so keep it up. But it seems to me that the chief complaint is that user profile pages are just heavily skewed towards committers. Is that the chief complaint? Are there other requests that people have made for user profile pages? Because for me, it seems like Drupal.org user profile pages are an extension of someone's Drupal resume. And the better we can make that, you know, I think the better off we'll all be.
Definitely. I would say that's true for the most part. I think there are some people that have used the free text areas of their profiles to really highlight what they're doing in the community really well. They've basically turned it into their Drupal resume.
But that's a manual process.
And it's completely a manual process right now. That is definitely been something that we've heard over and over again, is that it's if we're not contributing code through a commit even, because I will say you can contribute a patch that maybe had a great idea but doesn't get all the way into a commit message, and so it doesn't make it back to your profile. It's just completely lost. So we have to get better at giving that credit to people that are more than just module maintainers, because I think that's the real space that you get the credit right now, is if you're a maintainer, either of a active contrib module or if you're one of the core maintainers or contributors.
So, Ted, Ryan, do you guys, as far as user profiles, I mean, what do you guys feel are some of the big problems or some of the big issues? I won't say problems. We'll say issues.
I feel like they added one of my big ones, which was a city and state or, you know, country on the user profile that was seemingly unexplainably not there for a long time, and then one day it just sort of showed up.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I should have some big issues with it. I guess I don't.
Well, but that's because you are primarily a module maintainer.
Yeah, so I guess it's favored towards the work that I do. But so, yeah, like,
so you're happy. You don't want anything to change.
But definitely I would see like the benefit of people like doing documentation. It just seems like it's hard to automate. Like, it's easy to automate the commit messages. Not easy. I'm not saying it's easy work, but it's something, you know, you could write a process for. And I guess I could see that for documentation too. But the sort of like, you know, people, community organizers, you know, how do you sort of automate a process of, you know, he organized this camp, so he automatically gets credit or something like that. That seems a lot harder.
So Josh, what are some of the things that, you know, between Danny's work and things that you guys have talked about and tested internally that you know, potential improvements that we're looking at?
I think a lot of the improvements, the first round of improvements, are going to be taking the information that it's possible to fill into your profile, bubbling that up into a little bit better editing experience, and then displaying it a little bit nicer. So that's like phase one of this, without breaking everything into phases, because I always hate it when people break every project into phases.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is it's going to be incremental features that we just kind of keep adding. Kind of like whenever we rolled out a path auto on the user profile path. So now your username can be drupal.org/u/username instead of being drupal.org/user/whatever your user ID was. Because everybody likes to be identified by a random auto incrementing number.
Ted has his tattoo on his shoulder.
Tattoo on that, that's hardcore, man. I'm impressed. Yeah.
That's his ID.
So don't ever change those numbers.
But they're different on every subsite. Did you claim your number on the other site? Because it's different there.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that.
Yeah. It starts over every DrupalCon. There should be a rush to register first so that you can get the user 5 for DrupalCon or whatever.
Ooh, that's an exclusive to Drupal Easy. I've never heard that anywhere else before.
Oh, yeah. Every time you you create a... every time you create a new Drupal.org subsite account, you get auto-incremented with a brand new number.
I need to get like the hard copy exclusive music.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So better be careful.
I mean, some of the easy wins that I have always thought are probably fairly possible are, in addition to the commits, you know, we have information about what the exact number of documentation edits and the places where those documentation edits have occurred. The problem, though, I think, and the reason why we have this fuzzy, you know, less than 10 documentation edits or, you know, between 100 and 200, whatever those buckets are, is because it's relatively easy to game that system. Because anybody with a Drupal.org account can go to a documentation page, click edit, make a one character change, click save, and that counts as one. And then go back in and edit. So you can game stuff like that. So granted, there's an issue there, but there are documentation stats you can get. And you can even grab stats from groups.drupal.org as far as how many people have signed up to attend a meetup or have been an organizer of a meetup or have posted a wiki page in a group. So there's definitely some stats that we can pull from groups.drupal.org in as well.
Definitely. That's actually one of the big things that we're doing right now that people aren't really seeing is we're doing some behind the scenes changes to the structure of how profiles are stored on Drupal.org that we inherited from the history of Drupal. By the way, Drupal.org, I think, may be the largest Drupal site to have continuous upgrade in place. Like we never migrated Drupal.org. It's always been, you know, you upgrade from 4.7 to 5, from 5 to 6, from 6 to 7. It's in place. That's pretty phenomenal.
That's dragging along some heavy, heavy barbells of legacy.
We have 13 years of legacy, which is actually one of the big reasons to hire a permanent team is to have people who can focus on keeping the legacy that we need and getting rid of the legacy we don't. And one of the legacies that we don't need is we're still on the Profile 2 module instead of on user fields for Drupal.org profiles. So it's not an entity reference. It's, you know, all Profile 2 specific. So we're slowly migrating all of those over to user fields so that we'll have the ability to do more standard views integration type approach things with our Drupal.org profiles. It also gives us a means to do it the same way on all the subsites. So, for instance, with groups, we can actually have those fields that need to be synchronized between the two sites. They can be synchronized so that we can do our reporting off of the one master user database for the purpose of profiles and credits and things like that. So it gives us a better means to move forward. And unfortunately, that's not really, it's not very sexy work. I mean, you're right. You're working on the backside of the system, and we're basically migrating each of those fields one by one to the core user table on Drupal.org. So that's the fun work that we get to do, right? But when we're done, we'll have something that's a lot easier for us to lay out in some very interesting ways and tie together. And we've already started down that path. I mean, your organizations on your user profile are now associated to an entity reference field. People don't realize it on the front end because we just let them type in the name, but on the back end, it's actually tying it as a
oh, wow.
An entity reference back to the organizations you belong to, and that allows us to display you appropriately on the organization pages, which I think are the other half of the whole profile question, which is we need to get it really good on the user side, but we also need to be better about the organization side. And I don't just mean the big Drupal shop organizations. I mean the the White House doesn't have a really good landing page that shows all the people that work for the White House on their Drupal instance. And we don't have good navigation that could get you to there. And yet we use it all the time to sell how important Drupal is that, you know, we moved the White House to Drupal. Well, that's great, but nobody can see that on Drupal.org. And so we need to find a way to both give the individuals credit, but also to flow some of that credit out to the organizations that are involved as well.
What other data have you thought about, you know, possibly accessing and leveraging for user profiles? I mean, another, I guess, sort of obvious one, but, you know, probably very difficult to do in a meaningful way is IRC activity.
Hmm, that would be an interesting one.
Yeah.
We'd have to decide how to store that, because that's an enormous amount of data that we would have to convert to something that we can then search against.
Sure.
Not impossible, but it would be a really interesting approach to get into.
Well, even if it was just like, you know, when I can type in IRC, you know, seen Ultimike, like just like a little, like, Ultimike was last seen in the, you know, Drupal migration D8 room. What's the room called, Mike? You tell us what it is.
Palm Drupal Migrate.
Drupal Migrate, right? So last seen in the Drupal Migrate room saying, thanks, chicks. We'll see you tomorrow. I don't know what it was that you were just saying, but...
Oh, I don't want the last thing I said in IRC.
No, but isn't that what the bot tells you when you type that command?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That might but alter the fabric of IRC space-time if we start displaying that. But no, I understand exactly what you're saying. Is, you know,
points in IRC, it would be loved to. It'd be great to pull over the, you know, the plus karma points from IRC and pull that into user profiles in some way. I do know that there are some things that we have access to right now that we rely on self-reported status.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we actually did the registration for every DrupalCon, and yet that is self-reported.
Right. Yeah, you have to edit your profile and check. I attended, you know, DrupalCon Austin.
You should just pull that over and it should be on your profile. You shouldn't have to click a button to tell us that you attended if we knew you attended. Same thing for Drupal.org. Well, we actually do it for membership. So we have those great membership badges that pop up if you're an individual member or if you belong to an organization that's a member. And that's been automated. But we don't pass that back to the Drupal con sites, and that's something that we need to do. So a lot of the profile data is information that needs to flow both ways, both on Drupal.org and with the subsites. So getting better about that so that when we have a DrupalCon registration, you don't fill out your name three times. You know your name. We should
hopefully, yeah.
We should help you out with that field. Yeah.
All right. So when can we expect, and I hate asking this question, but people are gonna be wondering, so you know, big changes to the user profile page as far as the layout or, you know, something really noticeable.
My actual hope is that there will never be a big release. I want it to be incremental, and I want you to have to take a screenshot today and a screenshot 6 months from now. And when you look at the two of them, you will say, oh my God, that's completely different. But I don't want it to be a big release of a new feature. Those are historically hard for us to do with Drupal.org. I would much rather incrementally improve the thing. So more likely what you're going to see is one day there will be a pretty significant change in the layout because we'll have to implement a new grid system to start laying all this stuff out. Yeah. And you'll see that change. And then you'll be like, oh, wow, they didn't change as much as I wanted them to.
Right.
But then if you came back to it again 2 months later, you'd be like, oh, wow, where'd all this stuff come from? And if you're following along on our change notifications, and if you're following along on the various communication channels that we're setting up to share with people what's new on Drupal.org, you'll see those incremental changes. But we're trying to move from the idea that this is a website that needs a constant redesign to a product that we are incrementally improving. It matches better with the notion of volunteerism and contributions from individuals, and it matches better with the way that we can work as well. So,
what about, like, so if everything's sort of incremental and you may add a new field to the profiles, how do people like find out that information? Where, you know, there might be like an example is on projects now. There's sponsoring organizations, but I don't know how long that was out there before I noticed it.
It's only been out there about 4 weeks.
Okay.
So you probably noticed it pretty early on. This is actually something that I'm really working on to try to figure out how best to communicate change. We implemented changes at association.drupal.org. It's actually aliased at changes@drupal.org. And it's a mailing list that you can sign up for that will notify you whenever we're planning on a change to Drupal.org. We did it using Google Groups instead of using the Mailman stuff that was set up on Drupal.org just for ease of use and getting it off the ground. There is a news post from a couple months ago at this point where we kind of detailed what our plan was and how we were implementing that. We're actually establishing in the next few weeks, you'll see our change notification database come online where we're going to use the website infrastructure.drupal.org to actually track all of our changes, and it's also going to serve as the inventory of all the Drupal systems that might be affected at any given time. And so when we do a change, we'll say this change affects, and then that will be a place that we publish it, but then we'll share that on the Drupal Infra Twitter handle, and we'll send it to the email address. And my hope is that we also figure out some other channels that can actually reach a broader audience. The only broad audience channel we have at the moment is the Drupal.org homepage. And I don't know that I actually want to put every single new feature that we release on the Drupal.org homepage, because hopefully we're doing it frequently enough that's not the best place for it. But we're trying to figure out where that best channel would be. The problem right now is everybody has their Drupal experience in a different channel. There's no one common place where you sign up for or show me everything.
Right. All right. Well, I think we've covered everything I wanted to cover. Ryan, Ted, do you guys have your user profile answers or questions answered? Well, not you, Ted, because you didn't have any complaints at all.
I will look back at mine.
You should. You're get your photo up there, and that's showing up on your comments and commits now.
Yeah, I have to update that.
Well, we're gonna talk about the job site as one of our three stories. So I'm gonna move on here into some Drupal Easy news really quick. We've been busy the past couple of weeks, so I just want to get everybody up to date real quick. Our fall 2014 semester for Drupal Career Online is ongoing. This is week 4 of 12 for our students. And actually, one of our students, and I'm going to give Ted all the credit because Ted is actually mentoring this student. And Ted, were you aware that your student already has a Drupal 8 core commit?
I was not.
Yeah, so he went to, I believe it was the Philadelphia Drupal Camp. I don't know if you ran into him while you were there, Ted.
I did not.
But he participated, I could be wrong, may have been a different one, a different Northeast camp. But I think it was Philadelphia. He participated in the sprint day and, got his system, all configured, cloned Drupal 8, worked with someone there on, how to create a patch and test a patch and submit a patch. And it was, obviously a relatively simple patch, but it's now been committed to Drupal 8. So I think this is the first time that we've had a current student, get a core commit. So that's outstanding. So congrats to Joe. We just announced this morning, as a matter of fact, through our newsletter, the next semester for Drupal Career Online will begin on February 10th. Again, that's our 12-week Drupal Career Training Program. We meet 3 half days a week. So there'll be a link in the show notes if you would like some more information about that. And there'll be some blog posts and stuff coming out about that as well. As always, live online public workshops that we put on. You can find out about those at DrupalEasy.com. We're actually partners now with Blink Reaction as well, so you can go to Blink's training page and see our co-branded online and in-person training events as well, as well as we've been an Acquia partner for a long time, so you can go to training.acquia.com/events as well. So three different places where you can find our live, online, and in-person workshops. And then finally, a couple of blog posts that have gone up over the past few days regarding Drupal 8 Migrate and Core. We announced three sprints coming up, one obviously in DrupalCon Amsterdam that Ryan Wheel will be leading up. So if you're heading to Amsterdam and want to participate, you know, find Ryan on the sprint day. And if you check out the blog post on Drupal Easy, they'll give it, kind of give you some information on how to get started. In addition, I will be at Drupal Camp Atlanta on October 4th, I believe is the date, and I'll be doing a presentation on the status of Drupal 8 Migrate and Core, as well as running a sprint during the day, if you're interested. And then finally, the thing I'm probably most excited about is we're going to start doing weekly virtual sprints. So Wednesday evenings from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Meet on IRC, and then I will give you the connection information. I think we're probably going to start with GoToMeeting and see how that holds up depending on the number of people. But if you want to get involved and you want to learn how to get involved and you want to kind of help, need some help getting your system configured or finding some easy issues to start working on, that's the place to go. Think of it as a very targeted core mentoring. Only it's targeted directly at the Migrate and Core initiative. So that first blog post has information on all three of those events. And then I just posted another one yesterday, basically giving a rundown of the big picture of how Drupal 8 Migrate and Core actually works, along with a status of where we are on the project. So that's, again, that's kind of meant for new volunteers, new contributors. I'll be doing a series of blog posts to get people up to speed. It took me, you know, I'll say more than a few weeks to get fully up to speed, and I'm trying to compress the amount of time that it takes new volunteers by providing as much information as I can. So lots of great new content on DrupalEasy.com. All the links will be in the show notes. Speaking of Drupal Core, big news late last week, XJM posted something on groups.drupal.org with the announcement that there were zero Drupal 8 beta blockers remaining. I just checked again this morning, actually a little while ago, I should say, and there have been no new beta blockers found. So the plan is, if there's no new beta blockers found between last Friday and 2 weeks from that date, so in roughly the next week and a half or so, then we will be getting the first Drupal 8 beta, which should coincide nicely with DrupalCon Amsterdam. I don't know, Ted or Ryan, have either of you guys played with the new alpha? There was a new alpha released at the same time when that last beta blocker was solved.
I have not. I've played it with it pretty recently, but not since the alpha.
Right. I mean, it's looking pretty good. I mean, as far as I see bugs only because I see them when I'm working with the Migrate stuff, but when I'm playing around with it doing non-Migrate stuff, it seems pretty solid.
I mean, when you're doing the Migrate stuff, you're probably not even using the latest alphas, right? Or
right, yeah, that's true. I'm using the fresh clone version. It's really interesting because, you know, our students, I don't want to say they're worried, but they're very inquisitive about Drupal 8 and why are we teaching them Drupal 7 still? And I'm like, well, you know, Drupal 8's not going to be out till sometime next year. That's for certain. And I estimate, because I teach mainly site building, other than we do 2 weeks on theme development and module development. But other than those 2 weeks, we're teaching them site building, and probably 90% of what we're teaching them is still relevant in Drupal 8. You know, content types aren't going anywhere. Taxonomy isn't going anywhere. Views, obviously, isn't going anywhere. And it hasn't changed appreciably. I mean, I think the biggest change from a site builder standpoint when it comes to Drupal Core that I've seen or that I've played with, I should say, is the fact that when you go to, you know, mess with the fields on a content type, you now have three tabs instead of two. You have managed fields, managed form display, and managed display. Although I think managed display might be called something different.
Well, and I would say configuration management just from like the perspective of workflow. But if you only have one site and you don't like multiple environments, that's probably not that much. But
right, but from a site builder's perspective, if you are, you know, again, I'm definitely skewed by the view that I have of I'm interacting with people relatively new to Drupal all the time, and so I'm probably, you know, I'm not teaching them a whole lot of features at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But for kind of beginner to intermediate level site builders who you know either know a little bit about features or don't really use features, there's not a whole lot in Drupal 8 conceptually that's very different. So anyway, definitely check out the new alpha and play around with it. And yeah, it's a huge step. It'll be even better in a week and a half, hopefully, when we can announce the first beta of Drupal 8. All right, story number two. Let's talk about this jobs.drupal.org site, Josh. So this has been in the making for a long time, correct?
Yes. The plans for it started middle of last year, mm-hmm. and put out the RFP towards the end of 2013. It was awarded in early 2014, and basically we were actively developing it starting about a month, I'm going to say May through August, and then we launched it on August 25th. So
this is pretty much a replacement for groups.drupal.org/jobs. Is that fair to say that was kind of before this launch, that was kind of the only game in town?
I think that was one of the factors for it. Was definitely figuring out a sustainable self-funding solution alternative to the job board on groups.drupal.org.
And so this is, it's free to people to obviously look for jobs, but mm-hmm. for people to post jobs, what's the fee structure? Do you know off the top of your head?
I do.
It's a quiz.
It's a quiz, yeah. So if you're applying one job on Drupal Jobs, it's $199.
Okay. And how long, for how long?
30 days.
30, okay.
Yeah. And if you buy a pack of five, you can buy a pack of five for, I believe it's seven. I'm actually going to pull up the screen so that I don't misquote any of this. Yeah, a pack of five is $750, so it's definitely cheaper to go that way. And then we have a couple other kind of upsell opportunities for larger organizations that are doing a lot of recruiting. So you can get a branded company page that kind of highlights your organization in a kind of an HR way. Mm-hmm. You can feature a job listing. So you can buy a credit to take a job post and make it at the top of the list for 1 month, and that's $89 to do that.
So before you told us you had sold how many job credits?
At this point, we have sold a total of, sorry, I had the number up earlier, is 1,155.
Wow, that's great. So this is probably, you know, if it hasn't already, it's probably getting pretty close to paying for itself already.
No, not quite yet. We did a lot of coupons.
Okay.
So that includes coupon. So plenty of those jobs were free. There's actually, for just a couple more days, because we're still in September, if you mm-hmm. go to groups.drupal.org/jobs, there's a link to get a coupon code for one free job post. And we've seen a pretty good uptake on that.
Oh, wow. Okay. Definitely going to put that in the show notes for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, please use those free job posts. We want the jobs to be in there, and it's really about, you know, building that for the community. I'll get you the actual coupon code so you can list that in the notes as well.
Okay, outstanding.
I think it's like one free September or something like that, but I'll double check.
So we'll put that in the show notes for sure.
Excellent.
And does this totally replace the groups.drupal.org site or page?
So we haven't taken down groups.drupal.org/jobs yet, because we really want to see what the uptake is on the new job board. And because we don't have a, other than these coupon opportunities, which we plan on doing on a fairly regular basis just to keep up the job total volume, we don't really have a free option. And we didn't want to just replace, we didn't want to replace it without putting a free option out there.
All right. Yeah, I just found that link and put it into the show notes, so we definitely have that. And yeah, it is. It's one free September, all smushed together, no spaces. It's all capitalized all here. I don't know if it has to be all caps, but
I believe it does.
Okay, so all caps. So, very good. All right.
It's the commerce coupon system, so I'm sure that'll make it clear to everyone how exactly they need to put it in, right?
There you go. Exactly. So yeah, so people have 8 or 9 more days here to utilize that. So if you do have a Drupal job, you want to post, save yourself $200.
Yeah. So, and then go ahead and buy the featured post. Since it was free, you might as well feature it and move it up.
Get it up on top.
That's me doing the upsell right there. I'm really good at that.
All right, we'll make sure to pass that along to the higher-ups that you've done your job. So how the reaction's been positive so far?
We've had really great reactions. Just seeing the number of jobs posted to the site has been, it's been a lot of fun to kind of watch how many posts have gone up there. I think right now there are 109 that are active. We've seen that number because we launched on the 20th. Well, we actually released it to some of those supporting partners and sponsors to help us populate it a week earlier. So I guess that was like August 18th, in that range. Mm-hmm. And so some of their job posts are just now beginning to expire, and they're coming through and renewing them if they haven't filled them already. But we've seen it up around 140 total posted jobs. And the thing that's really impressive to me, if you have an active post on the site, then you get access to the job seekers database. And that's basically self-selected, so people can say, I want to be a job seeker, and they basically click to have their profile be viewable to companies that are interested. And we have 408 job seekers that are listed on Drupal jobs right now, which is pretty cool.
So do you have any information on, are there, this is obviously a worldwide job board. Are there parts of the world that are using it more or less? I mean, I would assume the U.S. is there's probably a lot of open jobs in the U.S., but how about other parts of the world?
We have 11 jobs open in the United Kingdom right now, 4 in Australia, 5 in Canada, 15 in Belgium. Go figure.
Those WonderCrop guys.
Yeah.
WonderCrop team, I should say.
Let's see. 1 in Uganda. There you go.
I think we just, for the community cultivation grants, I think we maybe just funded a project in Uganda, a Drupal project
awesome.
In Uganda.
Yeah. Well, it looks like they're trying to hire somebody to do the work.
Yeah, there you go. Could be.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
All that information, if you go to jobs.drupal.org, maybe it's someone to help facilitate the work. I don't know. you can actually see all the jobs filtered by location, filtered by type, put by position type, by skill level.
So I think the one thing I'm most excited about for this site is, correct me if I'm wrong, which, you know, I'm probably wrong again. I don't think I've gotten one right yet. But
just about this or in general?
Well, let's limit it to the podcast today.
Okay.
Just
okay.
To keep my ego from completely being crushed. Is this the first, like, kind of permanent Drupal site? And by permanent, I mean, like, non DrupalCon site that's responsive?
Ooh. Ooh. That is a very good question. I believe it is, yes.
Yeah, but I can't think of another one that uses a Bartik style theme that's responsive. So that's exciting all in its own.
This is definitely not Bartik, but
well, but it looks, but, you know, it's got the blue.
It's got that style. It's got the blue with the great net piece to it and kind of the Drupal default. Cheeky Monkey Media out of Canada. They were the design and dev shop on it.
Right.
And they did a lovely job taking the kind of standard Drupal site look, modernizing it a little bit. We've been really happy with some of the implementation in terms of how they made it look a little bit sleeker. Responsive was a big part of it because we knew that this site, perhaps more so than any other Drupal site, was going to get a lot of traffic from people on their smartphones and tablets that mm-hmm. were looking to get hired. I mean, when they're looking through those jobs or checking back on the site pretty regularly, we expect them to be doing that their downtime and kind of uptime, downtime, anytime. And mobile was a big part of that.
So I just thought of a completely unrelated question. Well, not completely unrelated, but mostly unrelated. Groups.drupal.org.
Yes.
You know, I've heard rumors, and again, I don't follow, you know, the issue queue on things like this, but that might be being in the process or in the pipeline to be upgraded to possibly using something like Drupal Commons.
Yeah, we're actively looking at that right now for a project sometime in 2015.
Okay.
It's not something that we can bang out before the end of the year.
Seems like a massive job.
It is, and it's going to take some. It's not one that can be upgraded in place. We're obviously going to have to migrate, and in the process of migrating, we're going to have to decide. You know, obviously, we get a lot of new features out of something like Drupal Commons. I mean, that would give us a lot of what people are asking for, quote unquote, out of the box. But as anybody who's ever built at one of the Drupal Commons sites knows, you get to the 80-20 rule. It gives you 80% of what you need, and you have 20% that you end up customizing. Mm-hmm. So that the devil is in the details of that 20%. Obviously, we would have to have really strong integration with Drupal.org. We want to make sure that we migrated the information that needed to be migrated and didn't migrate the information that didn't need to be migrated. Coming up with a plan for that. So it'd be a huge project. We actually have in Amsterdam a BOF that we're putting together, or we're going to pull together a few of those maintainers of groups and get them talking about it in a room. It's actually really exciting. I just last week hired my two newest people that we hired on, our web designer and our newest developer. Both have a lot of experience with Commons and COD. And so we're looking forward to
putting them to work.
What Jacob and Emily can provide us in that space. So it's going to be good.
All right, cool. All right. I just noticed we're about at an hour right now, so let's keep this train moving. So our third story, and this is actually another blog post that we put up over the past 2 weeks, but I figured there's enough to talk about here where we can make it one of our three stories in that. I did a quick review of Acquia Dev Desktop Beta 2, which if you've ever used Beta 1, or not Beta 1, the first version of Acquia Dev Desktop, it definitely had some I'll say, weirdness to it. And I've used it all along for teaching just because it was a very simple way to get newbies up and running with a local Drupal site with a minimum amount of fuss. But there's definitely been... the first version, you were using multi-site, almost by default every time you spun up a new site or used a new button, I should say. If you wanted to have Drush integration on Windows, even if you're not using Acquia Dev Desktop, that's kind of a big headache. So this time around, I decided we're going to, go with Acquia Dev Desktop Beta 2, and I started playing with it, and I started really liking it, and then I started digging a little bit more deeper into it and started talking to people who are using it on Windows, and I really found that there's not a whole lot not to like about Dev Desktop Beta 2. And I don't know, have any of you guys played with this at all?
I've been using the beta, I guess. I guess definitely the one that's redesigned. Yeah, it's a lot better.
We've actually gotten. I don't want to say it was like a quick post that I made, but it wasn't something I'd been brewing for the past few months. It was something I said, I've been using it a lot. Let me just put this out there and just so I get it documented and, give props to the team at Acquia. But a couple of the really big wins are, number one, that multi-site thing is no longer. Like, if you create a new Drupal site from within Acquia Dev Desktop 2, it's going to download a whole new version or a whole new copy of Drupal, the way that most people work. I'm not going to say everybody, but most people works where one code base per one site. So that, removes one of the big annoyances that I had. The big win that I saw, and it was really unexpected, was the Drush integration. And it works out of the box for both Mac and Windows, which is huge. Because even if you're a newbie to Drupal, you can take advantage of Drush. You know, if all you're doing is Drush DL and Drush EN for download and enable, that's a huge time saver. And in the past, we would have to, basically have lab hours set aside to get people on Windows up and running with Drush, just because it was such a pain in the butt. And this really removed a lot of those hurdles. And then on top of that, if you throw in the integration with Acquia Cloud and the ability to push from your local to your Acquia Cloud Dev or Acquia Cloud Stage, or even production if you're paying for a production environment, really is nice, and it reminds me of what the folks at Calamuna are doing with their Calabox, which has similar integration for Pantheon. So if you haven't checked out the new Acquia Dev Desktop beta, definitely check it out. If you teach Drupal, it's a huge, huge help.
I think it also doesn't, it sort of cordons the installation off, so you don't really have to worry about, because I wanted to set it up to test out for training, but I didn't want to mess up my current, like, Vagrant or MAMP, you know, installations. And it as far as I can tell, there's no, you know, it doesn't use the core PHP that comes with Mac, at least. So
it doesn't even use, if you have Drush installed, it doesn't use that same version of Drush.
Yeah, and I think you use a different version based on which PHP you said you wanted for that particular site, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's and I haven't seen any, you know, any big issues with it, so I'm actually, you know, pretty darn pleased with it so far. So there's a blog post up on DrupalEasy.com but you can catch all my pros and cons of that beta. All right, so webenabled.com and devpanel.com. If you are building Drupal sites and you are looking for a place to have a Git repository and a dev site and to launch your production site, definitely you're going to want to check out webenabled.com. They've been at it longer than most. They've got a new WebEnabled 2.0 beta, which you can access at my.webenabled.com. They have team development. And they've got, you know, some of the nicest tech support around. I think I had an issue. I forget exactly what the problem was. Oh, you know what it was? It was my dashboard was down for a few minutes the other morning, and I hopped on there really quick and sent a message, and I swear within 3 or 4 minutes they said, "Oh, sorry about that. Everything's all taken care of, and we were good to go." So that kind of fast turnaround is always really nice to see. So definitely check out webenabled.com and the new beta at my.webenabled.com. All right, picks of the week. I'm going to skip me because I've been talking a bunch here. I'll go towards the end. But Ted, looks like you've got a blog post, or tell me about this.
Yeah, so it's a blog post actually from a year ago by Aaron Froelich. I'm sorry, Aaron, for mispronouncing your name. This is when he worked at Single Burke, which is a development company in town in Ithaca. And he doesn't work there anymore, but I think they still sort of follow this way of development where I'd say it's a bit different than a lot of shops. And I'm beginning to really, you know, like it, where it's you're really conscious about every module that you put in, and you sort of try to not, you know, make sure you don't create a big Franken Drupal site. And it's an interesting blog post. I've actually talked with him a lot about this, so not everything I think that he's sort of his philosophy is in the blog post, but a lot of it is. So I think it's definitely some good ideas there. And check it out.
Yeah, he's a pretty clear thinker.
Yeah, and it's I think a lot of people sort of go the opposite direction, which can cause a lot of problems. Just like the whole, there's a module for that sort of attitude where I'm, you know, every little need I have in my site, I'm going to install a module.
Or even worse, you know, when you download a project, I'm going to enable every single module in this project, regardless of if I know what it does.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the other extreme.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Thanks, Ted. And Ryan.
Have to unmute. Okay. I have been working with the webmaster of a project, And so far, I've been sort of hesitant to throw a lot of new disciplines on her plate just because there's so many new things to do, learning Drupal, learning how to edit stuff. But then just this week, I was like, she asked me a question about, I need to change all of the colors on this website because we're rebranding it. And I said, all right, that's it. We're converting this thing to SAS. I'm going to teach you SAS, and then your life will be better. And in order to do that, you know, I said, well, what's a way we can kind of like get around maybe some of the command line stuff with SAS? So I came across this app. It's called Koala, as in the koala bear. And it runs on like every platform. It's a GUI app that sort of like lets you set up some really basic SAS compiling options pretty easily. And if you're not using SAS already, obviously that's a good idea. And then, yeah, it just kind of works. The other one that I want to mention really quickly is if you have not yet moved over to using Composer on the command line to like compile your dependencies and stuff, especially for me, Drush, like every time you go to install Drush, they're like, there are five different ways you could install Drush. But these days, the Composer method is really, it's sort of like, you know, what Drush is to Drupal, Composer is to any other PHP project, or Gem is to Ruby. I was having an issue with Drush, like logging into a particular site, there was some bug, and because I had it with Composer, I could just switch from Drush version 6.2 to version 6.3 to version 6.4 in about 5 seconds.
Right.
So having the Composer version installed is totally worth your time.
So let's go back to the Koala SAS editor. So
sure.
Is that basically a SAS editor and compiler all in one?
Yeah, I think for me, I'm using whatever text editor I want.
Sure.
For some you know reason. What? I don't know. It might just be that minimalist that they're like, you edit it with whatever, but then you kind of keep this window open in the background,
okay.
And you can check the auto-compile button, you know, which will sort of like auto-compile. But then also, if I've discovered this, if you have a project that has sort of SAS all baked into it, and it ships with a config.rb file, like the Zen theme, for example, it will automatically pick that up, so it knows what options you want to use and everything.
Right, yeah. So I used, for a long time, I used something called Scout, which sounds similar to what Koala is, where Scout was just this little, you know, GUI I ran in the background, and I would basically add a project to it, and I would say, okay, here's my SAS directory, here's my CSS directory, now watch this. So it was a GUI instead of a command line watcher.
Yeah.
So, all right, cool. And that is that cross-platform?
It is definitely cross-platform.
Oh, fantastic. Even better. All right, Josh, I love your pick of the week. You can talk about it as long as you want. Go.
Oh, I'd put this in before I saw that you did the blog post and in the previous conversations about Migrate and Core, but I think that's so huge with beta being so close, getting to the point that we can start thinking about the migration path for Drupal 6 sites to Drupal 8 in particular, because I think that's going to be huge for the community to get that happening.
Yeah, it's pretty darn cool. I think the coolest part about it is just the fact that it's extensible.
Yeah.
It's not a, you know, one size fits all. It's, you know, we're going to give you the core stuff, but if you need to extend it, you don't have to start from scratch with the Migrate module. You can build upon what's already here. So I think that's where the huge win is.
And the goal is for 8.0, or what is the goal for?
Well, that depends on who you ask and when you ask them.
Okay.
Yeah, we're hoping, we're pretty close to, I'm not going to say we're going to call the 6.x to 8.x, or the Drupal 6 to Drupal 8 migration done, but we're getting pretty close to the point where it's done enough where we can really start in earnest on the Drupal 7 to Drupal 8 migration, which is going to build upon the Drupal 6 to Drupal 8 migration, so it's going to be, you know, a good deal easier than the, you know, it's going to be able to leverage a lot of the work we've already done. So we have a couple big issues left with the 6 to 8 migration, and once we solve them there, they'll be solved for 7 to 8 as well.
And is this something that contrib, when you're making a contrib module for 8 that's out in 7 too, you'll write some sort of Migrate plugin to bring over your configuration? Or
Ted, I you know, That's a great question. I'm actually, that is, I have three blog posts planned, right. Three more blog posts planned, and that is for blog post number three. It's just kind of a module contributors, you know, kickstart your migration class.
Might as well make it blog post number one then.
I might have to move that up. No, we've had a lot of traction here in the past few weeks. And I think I'm actually thinking we're probably going to do a podcast about it here in the next month or two as well. So,
alrighty,
our listeners are going to be sick of Migrate and Core soon enough. I promise them.
Will you be the special guest?
It'll be just me. I'm not even going to tell you guys about it.
All right.
Either that, or I'm going to invite Chris Weber on and just have him, you know, recite commit messages. So.
Well, I have a podcast I do that I don't tell anybody about, so
that's just, you know, that's, you know, you in the morning like making coffee, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So Josh, I'm looking at the notes, you also have followed closely by TFA on Drupal.org. what's TFA?
Two-factor authentication.
Something the heck yeah.
Infrastructure and security teams are working on right now, and I'm following that very closely because I think it is critical to how we want to move forward with Drupal. Particularly, you know, my big thing with two-factor authentication is that I think at some point we are going to get to a requirement where you have to have that turned on if you have access to Git.
Absolutely.
As an example. So it's, I think it's going to be huge. And it will certainly make us noticeably more secure.
Yeah, no, that's a... I like that. I like that a lot. I played with it a little bit. I didn't really know what I'm doing because I'm not like a security guy like that, but I saw they had a beta up, and we talked about it, I think, on the last podcast with Rick.
We definitely have some we're going to have to follow up on some user workflow issues to it, because I think right now you'd pretty much have to be a developer to jump in and set it up for yourself, or at least have to be really comfortable with what two-factor is already.
Right.
And we've got a lot of users who aren't in that level of the progression yet. So definitely be something to get the user interface just right is going to be critical.
Sure, sure, sure. All right, so upcoming events. First of all, any of you guys going to be anywhere, any Drupal events? I'm guessing, Josh, you're going to be in Amsterdam?
I am going to be in Amsterdam, yes.
All right, and you, there's going to be a presentation, a session that you're leading?
We'll be doing a What's New in Drupal.org session. See, I should have known that what time it was going to be ahead of time. I think
that's
it's on
right.
Tuesday.
I'll find it.
So, and then there's a couple other working group sessions that I'll be dropping in on, and not necessarily leading, but definitely keeping my ear on.
All right, very good. And Ted or Andrew, Ted, do you have any more? I know you've been to a few camps lately. Any more on the immediate horizon?
Just the Ithaca Drupal users group tomorrow night.
Oh, very. What's the topic tomorrow night?
Oh, I'd have to check.
Okay. You guys are just full of information. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, great. No problem.
Ryan, do you have any information that you don't want to share with us?
Sure. It can be a Drupal Easy exclusive. Well, here's my Drupal Easy exclusive sound effect.
That's, wow. That about fits our budget, so go ahead.
That's the best I could come up with. Short amount of time, but no. If I was smart, I would be going to the Pacific Northwest Drupal Summit because reasons.
Lots of
that's
reasons.
Secret information right now that may become public information in a couple of weeks.
Okay, we won't tell anybody.
Can I talk about stuff I would do if I was smart?
I don't think we have enough time, Ted.
That'd be a whole nother podcast.
All right, so a couple more events I did want to mention. Our partners over at Blink Reaction are having an introduction to Symfony 2, getting ready for Drupal 8 training at DrupalCon Amsterdam. That's on Monday, September 29th. Although I did hear this morning, I think that might be sold out. So I'm not sure of that, but that was kind of, I heard that in passing, let's say, this morning. So
Ryan, you missed the sound on that. That sounded like an exclusive.
Yeah, that could have been exclusive. And then Drupal Camp Atlanta. I definitely want to mention this. This is coming up on October 4th, Saturday, October 4th. So what's that, about 2 weeks, a week and a half. Holy cow. One-day event at Kennesaw State University. I believe that's north of Atlanta. A different location than it has been for the past few years. Definitely returning to its roots. I think the first Drupal Camp Atlanta or two took place actually at the same venue. It's a full-day camp with plenty of sessions, a focus on Drupal in education. I will actually be involved in three sessions. I'll be involved in the keynote as one of the panelists. I will be involved in a session on Drupal career training, which I might know a thing or two about. And then the aforementioned, I'll be giving a presentation on Drupal 8 Migrate and Core, where we're at and where we're going. And I will be signing up volunteers right there to help. And when I'm not presenting, I will be in hopefully a BOF room or a sprint room somewhere working with volunteers and contributors. So if you want to kind of get kick-started onto Migrate and Core, definitely come to Drupal Camp Atlanta. It's always a great camp. I've never had a bad time. Always really good people, really good sessions, really good after party. So I'll be there and really looking forward to it.
Mike, do you need me to sit in the front row of your panel with my Viber slap so whenever you say something really exciting, I can just...
As long as you call it something other than a Viber slap, I think I'd be fine with that.
No, that's what it's called.
That's the real name.
It's an official instrument and everything.
I'm just not comfortable with that name. I don't know what to say. So, all right. So, Josh, where can people find you online?
Probably the best place would be on Twitter, Joshua_IO, and also on Drupal.org, username Joshuwami.
Joshuwami, where does that come from?
Oh, a long time ago, I signed up on IRC and Joshua M was taken, and so I just kept going with the letters, and it actually kind of sounds fun to say, I've stuck with it, yeah.
It sounds like something that comes on a sushi boat.
I was thinking more like, it fit with the guru title. I could be the Joshuwami of something.
Oh, kind of like the Swami. I see what
you're saying. Yeah.
All right, very good. Ryan, I saw you just had a new Yellow House podcast released. And
tell us
about that, and where can people find you online?
Yeah, well, for the Yellow House podcast, in which this week we talk about workplaces and education and creating communities, which I guess we talk about that every month, but that's ouryellowhouse.com. But then you can also find me on Twitter as Liberator without the last vowel, or just searching for Ryan Price on whatever social network you happen to be on. I'm probably there.
All right, and Mr. Bowman.
Ted Bow on Twitter and Drupal.org and sixmiletech.com.
All right, and as always, you can find Drupal Easy at Drupal Easy on Twitter, and I am Ultimike on Twitter and pretty much everywhere else on the internet. All right, well, let's wrap things up, and I will say, Josh, thank you very much for your time today and for your continued hard work on the systems that most of us are touching every single day.
It's my pleasure. We're enjoying it.
We look forward to kind of what, these incremental changes. So I think we all expect to see something almost weekly at this point, so you better stop podcasting and get to work.
Go get
working on that stuff. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can subscribe to all of our episodes on iTunes and Miro and Stitcher, and you can always listen to our podcast on DrupalEasy.com. So that does it. Andrew was not here. Andrew was totally MIA this week, so he may have been... Oh, you know where he is? I just realized. I think Media Current is having a... is there a retreat this week? Oh, no, maybe it's probably closer to... Well, I don't know what I'm talking about.
So what are they retreating from?
It's probably not this week. He's probably just busy. It's probably the same week as Drupal Camp Atlanta.
Make more sense.
That would make much more sense. Or Andrew's just... He's done with us. So. Anyway, Josh, thank you very much, and we will see everybody next time on the Drupal Easy Podcast.
Okay, I'm here to stay in the Drupal way, where I leave behind beliefs from yesterday, where the themers need the coders.